So another thing we've been hearing about, and you covered in your talk at ASCO last year that I think is really fascinating, are the IDH inhibitors, IDH1 and 2. Can you go through that?
Yeah. So again, this is just the power of molecular genetics. Of course, when I was in med school learning about the Krebs cycle and metabolism, had to memorize all these charts and enzymes. I thought I was done and never have to do that again. But clearly, I was wrong. So mutations were discovered by looking at the – this is the benefit of academic research, investment into the NCI, a little political pitch there. So out of the government funding these whole genome-wide tumor registry exome sequencing, it was turned out that IDH2 was represented and mutated in about 15% of myeloid leukemias and IDH1 in about 7 or 8%. It's a higher mutation rate, for example, in brain tumors where it reaches almost 90%. But sticking with leukemia here, so these are not as common as FLT3, but they're not infrequent either. And what ends up happening with the mutation is it doesn't alter the metabolism per se, but it generates this new molecule, this hydroxyglutarate that is not synthesized with the wild-type enzyme. And this agent, this hydroxyglutarate that we call oncometabolite, goes in and affects the ability to methylate the DNA and has wide genome-wide changes in terms of epigenetics. We don't understand how that works, but it's clear that by affecting the IDH pathway and this molecule that you get the initiation or progression of leukemia. And so what the investigators with endocitinib, which is the first IDH2 inhibitor that's been taken in the clinic, what they've been able to show with single agent, these are relapse refractory patients with acute myeloid leukemia, all who've had an IDH2 mutation, and with single agent oral medication, they've been able to induce remissions in a little bit over a third of those patients. And many of those remissions have been durable, 6, 12. I've even had a patient that's been durable for 24 months. So, profound single agent activity. Of course, as per the discussion today, this drug hopefully will get approval, and then it needs to be moved up front. Does this help those patients who are IDH2 mutated, who walk in the door and get regular chemotherapy? That's going to need to be decided with more clinical trials. But it's an exciting, exciting age.
I mean, getting back to your older patient also, yeah. Where is that going to fit in the older patient?
Yeah, so, so obviously CPX351 fits in. IDH2 and IDH1 mutations are seen across the board. There's very similar frequency in younger and older patients, so it doesn't matter there, as well as in primary de novo disease and secondary, so it doesn't matter there. And, combination in the fit patient with standard chemotherapy, combination in the unfit patient with what are called hypomethylating agents, azacitidine or decitabine. So these agents are often utilized in older patients. And as I said with CPX351, that age threshold may be changing, but at least right now for older patients over age 70, we think about the use of these hypomethylating agents. And if a patient has an IDH mutation, why not add one?
And in terms of IDH1, I see one agent, ivosidenib, same story. You see prolonged remissions in some patients?
Same story. Now, it's taken a little bit longer to get that trial through because it's half as frequent as the IDH2. And there are more players. So there are more pharmaceutical companies that have IDH1 inhibitors, but they're all showing very similar activities. That is, about a third of the patients are going into remission, and many of those patients are durable, and some of them are even going into molecular remission.